1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 23 through chapter 11, verse 1. All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. Let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. Eat whatever is sold in the market, asking no questions for conscience sake. For the earth is the Lord's in all its fullness. If any of those who do not believe invite you to dinner, and you desire to go, eat whatever is set before you, asking no question for conscience sake. But if anyone says to you, this is offered to idols, do not eat it for the sake of the one who told you, and for conscience sake. For the earth is the Lord's, and all its fullness. Conscience, I say, not of your own, but that of the other. For why is my liberty judged by another man's conscience? But if I partake with thanks, why am I evil spoken of for the food over which I give thanks? Therefore, whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense either to the Jews or to the Greeks or to the church of God. Just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. Imitate me, just as I also imitate Christ. In my introduction last week, I went over the things that led up to where we were. We covered two chapters, all covering the subject of Christian liberty. What is Christian liberty? What are the limits of Christian liberty? How are we to govern our Christian liberty? And we looked at all those things. Well, this morning, we're going to look at the closing section of this context. Paul summarizes everything that he has said up to this point. What is our Christian liberty and how is it to be lived out? Look at verse 23. All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. One of the things we can enjoy in the Christian life is being freed from the law. There were 613 laws that the Jews had to live under. Jesus said, I have come to fulfill the law, not to abolish the law, but to fulfill the law, and fulfilling the law he did. We aren't held under the dietary law, but we are held to a law. We are held to the law of love. We are to love the Lord our God with all our soul, mind, strength, and we are to love our neighbor as ourselves. In reality, when we look at those two great commandments that Jesus said, he also said that the whole law is wrapped up in these two. We are held to a higher law, and that law is love. But we are freed from the dietary law. All things are lawful, but not all things are helpful or edify. There are those that want to put restrictions on the size of our soft drinks and our government. They want to regulate how much is served at one time so that you don't get overweight, so that your heart doesn't work too much because of all the sugar and the caffeine. They want to regulate. They want to put laws on certain things. I have the freedom to go into any place and drink and eat anything I want to eat or drink. I can have a 16-ounce glass. I can have a 24-ounce. I can have a 64-ounce. I could drink a 128, a whole gallon, if I want to. That's the freedom that I have. Do I need a law to help me choose the right thing, or will I be mature enough to choose the right thing for myself? Will drinking 180 or 128 ounces of soda be helpful to me? Will eating the Big Mac sandwiches be helpful to me? It's not helpful. Paul talks about this subject in chapter 6, verse 12. All things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. With the freedom to choose, will I become a slave and lose my freedom? If I have the liberty, the freedom to drink alcohol, is that helpful? It's not helpful, but I have the choice to do it. I can choose to do it. But here's the problem. A lot of times people choose to start having a little glass of wine before you know it, they're buying those big cases of wine. And what has happened? They become enslaved. You know, I remember someone once saying that his brother said, you know what the problem is with you Christians is you aren't free to drink. And he in response said, the problem is that you think you have the freedom, but you don't have the freedom to choose not to drink. When you become enslaved to something, you no longer have that freedom. Paul's saying that I will not become a slave to anything that I look at as a freedom. Does it edify? Not only are we to consider ourselves in the matter of making the right choices, but we must consider others and the decision-making as well. Look at verse 24. Let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. Here's where the law of love comes into play. Later on in chapter 13, Paul talks in depth about love, which most people consider the love chapter. And verse 5 says this, love does not seek its own. It gives a whole list of things. And it says, love does not seek its own. Verse 24 says, let no one seek his own. Love does not seek its own. Christian liberty does not allow us to do what we want to do at the cost of another. Love puts the other person first. John 15:13, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. In the book of Ephesians, Paul says that the husband is to love his wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. 1 John 3:16 says that we are to be ready to lay down our own lives or ourselves down for the brethren as Christ laid down his life for us. If we are called to love our fellow Christians to the point of laying down our lives for them, can't we at least forfeit our liberties for their sake? One time a person said, I would die for Christ. And the other person said, then when are you going to start living for him? It's easy to say the right things. Sometimes it's a little more difficult to put those things into action. When we started this subject in chapter 8, verse 1, Paul said, from the very beginning, knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. Let us love our brethren more than our liberties. When we are faced with choices, let us not only choose what is best for us, but more importantly, what is best for the others. Paul gives us some simple guidelines in verses 25 through 27. Verse 25, eat whatever is sold in the market, asking no question for conscience sake. Paul is telling them, and we've been over this, Paul is telling them, when you go to the market and you know that it's pretty prevalent that the meats that are being sold in the market were once sacrificed to idols, don't ask, was this offered to Zeus? Where did this meat come from? Was this beef raised in an idol farm where it's sold for idol meat? Who cares? It doesn't matter. Don't ask. And he says this and then quotes Psalm 24, verse 1. For the earth is the Lord's and all its fullness. Paul has already addressed the fact that we know the one true God. We know that these idols are nothing. We saw that in verse 6 of chapter 8. Yeah, for us there is one God, the Father of whom are all things, and we for him, and one Lord, Jesus Christ, through whom are all things, and through whom we live. What Paul is saying is that we know that the meat in the market was provided by the only one true God. We know that everything that was created by God. Who cares what these people offered it to? It really doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. These people are wrong. Guideline number one, don't ask questions in the marketplace. Verse 27, if any of those who do not believe invite you to dinner and you desire to go, eat what is set before you, ask no question for conscience sake. Guideline number two, don't ask those who invited you over what that meat that was set down before you was used for. You know, I mentioned this before, but if some old friends or family members invite you over, and you say, well, you know, this is a great opportunity to share the love of Christ with those who are unsaved. I think I'm going to go over. Don't ask them where this meat was offered or how it was used. You know, something similar that would be in our day is if you as a Christian decide, you know what, I'm not going to drink any alcohol, no wine, it's not good, I'm not going to drink it. We go over to an unsaved family friend's house and go over there and we say, how'd you cook this meat? Did you use any wine? Use any alcohol to give this little flavor? Who cares? It's not going to affect you. Just eat it. Now Paul throws in the clause, verses 29 and 28. But if anyone says to you, this was offered to idols, don't eat it for the sake of the one who told you, and for conscience sake, for the earth is the Lord's and its fullness. Conscience, I say, not of your own, but that of the other. For why is my liberty judged by another man's conscience? Now you're sitting at dinner over your unsaved friend's house or your family's house, and the meat's put down in front of you, and your weaker brother says, wait, did you know that that meat was cooked in wine? In Paul's day, it was idols, but in our day, it's wine. Did you know that that was cooked in wine? And in your mind, you're saying, so then I expect it to taste a little better. But outwardly, you say, well, I appreciate you telling me that. I wasn't aware of that. And you decide not to eat that delicious tenderloin sauteed in wine and cooked to a perfect tenderness. But what we really see here is the law of love being fulfilled. Even though we have the knowledge, even though we understand the truths, love is put into practice. We're going to, for the conscience sake of our weaker brother or sister, we're going to choose not to eat that meat. Maybe it isn't a weaker brother or sister. Maybe it's the one who invited you over. If you are questioned concerning things that they find questionable, then the same rule applies to them. If they're asking the same questions or they have the same doubts, then you're to treat them in the same manner. You know, I offered this to an idol. Maybe I shouldn't eat it then. Well, thank you. I'll sit here and watch you eat the meat, and you don't eat it. The same thing's true. It's not really clear who's mentioned here, but either case, you would sit there and say, I'm not going to eat this meat. For the sake of the unbeliever who might think that you're having fellowship with him, eating in communion with him, and enjoying the same meat that was sacrificed for an idol and taking part in that worship. Or you're looking and taking into consideration your brother or sister who doesn't have the full knowledge and understanding that everything is the Lord's and the fullness therein. And therefore you can eat it because you know there is no such thing as an idol or a false god. There's only one true God. And God, the one that we know, is the one who created everything. Therefore I can eat this meat. Either way, you still don't eat. But again, Paul quotes verse 24. But I think for a little different reason, a little twist. Yeah, the meat's his. And everything that God has created is his. But also, that unbeliever is his. And that weaker brother or sister is his. And it's more important that we understand that God is more concerned about the unbeliever and the weaker brother or sister than he is about your rights in eating the meat that was set down before you. Even though you understand, or that I understand, that the meat is the Lord's. There are things that are more important than our rights. It's not about our liberty as much as it is about the welfare of the other person. Verse 30. But as I partake with thanks, why am I evil spoken of for the food over which I give thanks? Because our thankfulness doesn't outweigh the way we treat others. Be thankful for the food we receive doesn't carry more weight than the lack of love we have for another person. You know, that's just a way of saying, and I don't know if it was a rhetorical question, but that's just a way of saying, but I gave thanks. Well, what are we doing? We're justifying what we're doing. We're going to find a reason why it works, why I can do what I really want to do. And that's not love. And Paul makes this clear in the next couple verses. Verse 31, therefore, whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Here is the answer to the question that was asked in the introduction. Why are we here, and what is life all about? At Appalachian Bible College is the school that I went to, and their motto was, life is for service. As we graduated, we were given our certificate of completion, but also a little towel. And the towel had, life is for service. And I believe that it came from the Lord's Supper. When Jesus got on his knees and he washed the disciples' feet. Mark 10, verse 45 says, for Christ did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life a ransom for many. And John 8, 29 says, the Father has not sent me or left me alone, for I always do those things that please him. I love those verses. Everything and anything we do should be done with God in mind. I mentioned just voting. When we vote, do we vote with God in mind? All the things that we do, everything, and it says all things, everything that we do, we are to do to the glory of God. Do we have God in mind when we do what we do? You know, one of the things that I've always used as a liberty, and can I do this? And if I were to go through a cashier line, can I purchase this item and give someone a track? Or would that unbeliever say, what is a Christian doing with one of those or that or whatever the case may be? And if I'm uncomfortable to give a track or to share the gospel with someone because of something I've purchased or something that I'm doing, maybe I shouldn't be doing it. That's just my approach to it. We have to ask ourselves, even though I have the right, the liberty to do this, will it enhance my walk with God and will it edify another? Am I choosing my own interest over the interests, the glory of God? And am I more focused on pleasing myself than pleasing God? And many times, folks, I believe that we are more focused on pleasing ourselves than pleasing God. We're all guilty of it at some time or another. But what we must do is have that understanding. There's something we call in hermeneutics a presupposition that when we go to scriptures, don't go to the scriptures deductively. What I mean by that is don't go with an already mindset. Don't go there already thinking you know the answer to the thing that you're observing. We want to go inductively. We want to go to that passage and say, my mind is empty and I'm going to let the scriptures say what the scriptures say and I'm going to come to a conclusion based on the scriptures to the best of my ability. We must understand that we are going to be prejudiced. We must understand that we're going to have these things that we want and we're going to try to justify why we do what we do and we're going to do it. We're going to find a way to do it. We must understand that's who we are. And when we can understand that, then we can empty our mind of that garbage. And we can sit there and say, will this glorify God or is this glorifying myself? Is this something that is for the purpose of pleasing God or is it for the purpose of pleasing myself? And that's how we have to approach everything. How is it going to help me be more like Christ or how is it going to help that other person be more like Christ? The purpose of life is to please the Father. It's to glorify God the Father. Jesus Christ lived that life. Paul lived that life. Peter lived that life. And so can we. Look at verse 32. Give no offense either to the Jews or to the Greeks or to the church of God. Why are we here and what is life about? Loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, strength, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. If we love God, our love will be seen by our obedience to God. You know, and that's what Jesus said. He who has my commandments and keeps them, it is he who loves me. The Great Commission is to lead the unsaved to the saving knowledge of Jesus Christ, Matthew 28. And we are to work together as a church to edify one another till we all come to the full stature of Jesus Christ. We are to have a lowliness of mind, putting each other first. Put your brothers and sisters before yourself. It's throughout Scripture. We know this is true, that we are to help one another when we come together, and everything that we do, we are doing with the purpose of edifying that purpose to the point of them becoming mature and looking like Jesus Christ. Ephesians chapter 4. My focus is Christ and His church, and everything else is secondary. Life is about Christ and His church. We were created to glorify God. Christ came and died to build His church. Nothing else. It's not about your cars. It's not about your house. It's not about anything else. It's not. It's about Christ and His church. And you say, well, it's about my family. So your family's supposed to be involved in the church. They serve in the church. If you don't raise your kids teaching them the importance of Christ in the church, they're not going to see that when they get older. And we will lose that in the generations to come. I remember a lady really early on, and some of you know her, Mrs. Butler. She was a fabulous woman. Her grandfather was a preacher. Her father and uncles were preachers. Her brothers and sisters were missionaries and preachers. She would have been one, but she had a condition that they couldn't take care of. Now would have been no problem. She would have went. Her nephews and nieces were missionaries and preachers. And then that next generation, they lost something. And her heart was broken. Many of them weren't following the Lord. What a heritage. If we don't raise our children and we have this mentality that our family is before the church, then we are sadly mistaken. It's not that our family is before the church. They are part of the church. And we must be united with our family as we are united with the rest of the church. Life is about Christ and His church. If people don't understand, if they don't convey to their kids very early on that it's about Christ, they'll never see it. I know I'm going off on a little tangent here, but it's so important, and there's many of you who will have kids sooner than you realize. It just goes and it comes upon you. When we raised our kids, we didn't say, "You disobeyed me." That was part of it. We taught them saying, "You disobeyed God." When you disobeyed what we had to say, you disobeyed God because it says this, and we'd point them to Scripture. What's life all about? It's about Christ and His church. "Just as I also please men," verse 33. "Just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved." We have seen chapter 9, verses 1 through 8, Paul has forfeited all his rights. He could take along a believing wife. He could accept pay from the Corinthians. He could do all these things. He had the liberties. He had the rights to these things, but he chose to forfeit his rights. And the reason why is found in 22. Paul says the same thing that he says in this verse, "To the weak I become weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some." Chapter 11, verse 1. "Imitate me just as I imitate Christ." Paul wasn't afraid to make this statement because these people knew firsthand that Paul practiced what he preached. He's not asking them to put aside their liberties and rights, to forfeit what they're able to do without first doing it himself. Paul was a man who practiced what he preached, but he didn't leave it at himself. He said, "But as I follow Christ, as I imitate Christ." Christ is the ultimate example. Christ came to be an example. John 4:34, Jesus said to them, "My food is to do the will of Him who sent me and to finish His work." John 5:30, "I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is righteous, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me." John 6:38, "For I have come down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of Him who sent me." Everything that Jesus did, He did to please the Father, and the Father sent Him to die for the sins of the world. He died for you and me. It pleased the Father to bruise Him. What is the purpose of life for all mankind? To do the glory of God. The problem is that the unsaved are blind, and they don't understand what it is that they are meant to do. They don't know. But the purpose that is meant for their life is the same that is meant for ours, but they're blinded. How do we live out this life to the glory of God? By loving Him with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. By putting others before ourselves. And making sure that everything we do will strengthen our walk with the Lord. Earlier I said that there are Christians who know what life is about, but don't live out their lives in accordance to what they know. Now that we know, will we put to practice what we have just heard and live our lives to the praise of His glory? Let's pray.